Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
And
here's John Williams.
We do it over the weekend. That means on Monday, I sometimes have two. Hi, it's John, and we're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Actually, the Showcase is now the Skyline, isn't it? We're 18 stories up and looking at another beautiful summer day in the Windy City. On the one. I hope you had a terrific weekend. I swam in Lake Michigan. I was maybe 75 yards out up to my chest in water, so clear I could see my little tootsies in the sand. I just love, love, love it, and the water's warm enough now that if you're safe enough, you can really enjoy the water. Foo Fighters were at Wrigley Field last night. We live close enough to that that we could hear the concert pretty well, so we decided to stroll on over and watch the concert. And as we were going to and from Wrigley Field last night, I noticed a lot of people walking the same way people do when they're on the deck of a ship at sea. And I wondered what the average blood alcohol content is of somebody at a Foo Fighters concert. In fact, I was talking to my niece who was with me, and she and I were sort of doing some calculations. And I thought, well, if there's 40,000 people at the Foo Fighters concert last night, which sounded awesome, by the way, my son and daughter-in-law were there, and they said it was terrific, and we just stood outside and heard it pretty well for a lot less. I mean, it was loud. Foo Fighters were just killing it, it sounded like. It looked like it, too.
Do they have a screen on the in that parkway now where you can see inside?
They have a screen on the parkway, on that little park there, but they don't show the concert on the inside. But there's a little sliver if you stand on Waveland over by the firehouse. If you stand on Waveland and look towards the center field screen, you can just barely see. Like every now and then we'd go, oh, there was a drum. You know, because they do a projection on the screen. But you're there mostly to just listen and watch the people. And so we were sort of thinking, well, if 0.08 is legally intoxicated, and you got 40,000 people, 39,005 of whom I think were getting close to that, I wonder what the record is for most, you know, alcohol consumption parts per concert. For instance, we saw the, the Parrotheads. What's that?
Jimmy Buffett.
We saw Jimmy Buffett there. And, you know, but it was, and so it was a lot of people totally decked out, ready to party. But they're older, the Jimmy Buffett fans, and they can't drink like the Foo Fighter fans can. Oh, they'll drink, but they just can't, they cannot keep up with these kids, I'll tell you. So I'm just wondering, like, A, what the band is that probably has the, you know, hardest partiers at. And then if you get enough people in there, it looked very wobbly. I'll just say that. But I'll bet you had a good time. Sure looked like a good time. Blackhawks convention was over the weekend, too. And that was a lot of fun. We did our Saturday show from there. One of our guests was Tony Esposito, Tony O. It was a lot of fun to visit with him. I noticed on his Wikipedia page that in his first NHL game, Tony Esposito, his first game as a pro, 69, he's in the net. And on the other team for that first game of his is his brother. So it's Phil versus Tony. The game ended in a 2-2 tie in which Phil scored both of the goals against Tony O. Tony had 33 saves in that game. But he wasn't happy about it. And he said, and I'll tell you a little story. My mom didn't talk to my brother for 2 weeks after that. Jamal Mayers was on with us, too. He picked up a ring for the Blackhawks. His name is inscribed in the trophy in 13, I think it was. He's a 15-year journeyman in the NHL and now works with the Blackhawks and some of the youth and education programs they have. And we had a real nice chat, Steve. You know how I connect with certain high-profile guests, and afterwards you can just tell we're going to be swell pals?
I'm sure that's happened before.
So there we were just having a terrific time. And at the end I said, well, you just look terrific. And he said, you know what, John, you look terrific too. And I said, well, thank you. And he commented on the shirt I was wearing. It was a short sleeve shirt, black with little white sunbursts on it and flowers and trees. I said, I've got the right colors, but it's a little tropical. And he said, no, I really like that shirt. Tell me, does it come in men's sizes? And then he got up and left.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, John.
It really did hurt my feelings.
Does it come in men's sizes?
I've been driving around town lately, though, and this really is starting to bother me. And I don't know if you have any advice for me, if you've been into this situation before or not. But my car dashboard has that little orange warning light. And for some of us, you know, it shows an engine or maybe just an orange exclamation point. But it tells you that something's wrong with your car. Some of us have been driving with that light on for many thousands of miles, and we seem to be okay. And the longer you drive around with that on, the more okay you seem to be with it, which you probably shouldn't be.
Wait a second. They all mean something different, so which light is on?
It's just two lights. One is the red, oh my God, you're about to explode light. And then the other one is just an orange light that comes on.
Tire pressure.
No, it is absolutely not that.
Is it the engine light?
It's the engine light.
So it's in the symbol of an engine.
I think so.
Oh.
So, well, you know what an engine looks like.
Yeah.
So have you taken it in?
Well, I really don't feel the need to. When it first came up, I thought, oh my God. And then I'm driving around, and everything's okay.
Yeah, I had a Pinto where the oil light would come on, yeah. And then if I would bash the dashboard, it would go off. So that's what I did for a while, and then my Pinto burned up.
When I get to be king, here's what's going to happen. There's going to be a button, because it could be a lot of things. It could be you're due for a service check. It could be, hey, you haven't given us any money lately. Why don't you come on down? That's what I think it mostly means.
Uh-huh.
So here's what they need to do. If that orange light on my dashboard is indicating something's wrong with my car, I should be able to push a button. Lord knows I got a lot of them where the CD player used to be. I ought to be able to push a button, and it will tell me what the reason is for this, and then I'll decide if I'm worried about a service check or my oil or a fan blade or something.
Because the car knows,
and it's not telling me.
That's a really good point.
So why doesn't the car tell you? Because you need to bring her on in. We need to just take a look at this thing here.
So my engine light is on and has been on for thousands of miles, and I brought it in.
Yeah.
In the first few,
right?
Like you should do.
I've done that already once,
and they told me what it was. And they said it's not really vital. You know, it's just kind of this thing.
It's kind of this thing where you come in.
So I'm driving. Yeah, but that's okay. I went into not the dealer, but a shop I trust. I would trust the dealer too. So I'm driving around with my orange light on, and my fear now is that my orange light's going to need to come on for something more important, and I'm never going to know.
Totally. Right. So I've already made the decision that whatever this is not a big deal. But now maybe it's orange for a different reason, and I don't know.
But typically they can reset it.
They can reset it if you bring it in.
Right.
I don't want to bring it, I guarantee you. I don't want to take a half a day to go do that.
Huh. My car tells me what's wrong with it.
For instance?
For instance, the tire pressure, because
right.
I changed my rims and they weren't factory and blah, blah, blah. And then also my engine light. But you know when you hit that little button when you see your miles that you've driven?
Mm-hmm.
If you click that a couple times, it shows you different screens, and typically one of those screens will be the issue.
Maybe that is the way on your car. If the tire's pressure is low on my car, I will get a, you know, semi-flat tire icon. And if there's something else, I'll get an icon for that. But just the engine light is coming on? I don't know what that means. I don't know what is wrong with the engine per se. And the car does, and it won't tell me. And I resent that. I love this car. It's a good car. I spent over $20,000 on it. It doesn't have a CD player. Have I mentioned that? But I just think that when the orange light comes on your dashboard, you should be able to get more information. Tom, you're on WGN Radio. Hello.
Yes, how are you?
I'm good. What's on your mind?
Okay. I work for NAPA. I'm an outside salesman. But you can go to any auto parts store, preferably NAPA.
Yeah.
And they have a OBD tester, and they plug it in underneath your dashboard, and there's usually some, it could be the gas cap, okay, but it'll give you a code that tells you there's something, it'll tell you what's wrong.
Yeah.
And you don't have to go to the dealer. I mean, they might charge you, but I mean, any, like I said, most NAPA stores will, you know, they got the thing right there. They'll go out in the parking lot and plug it in, and 30 seconds later, you know what's wrong.
Wait, the guy at NAPA will do this for me?
Sure.
And because I'm not going to be able to figure out how to get that under my hood. I'm just proud when I know where the latch is to lift the thing.
You got
to
have a special tool.
Yeah, I ain't got a special tool, trust me. So, but the guy at NAPA will do this, and then he'll go, oh, it's just your gas cap. We need to tighten that up or something.
Right. It'll give him a code, and then you can look up the code and see what it shows what's wrong.
Tom, I'm really glad you're listening. Thank you for the call. I'll see you at NAPA.
Okay.
Have a good day. I think that's what Dan was going to say, too. Hey, Dan, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, good. What's on your mind?
You could buy a code reader. You just plug it in under your dash, and it gives you the code. You can erase it, and it'll take that light off your car.
Well, okay, there's two problems with that. I don't want the light to come off if it needs to be on, right? Like, I do want to know. So I don't just want the light to come off. I want to make sure I'd like to know what the problem is. Number two, you just stick it under the dash. Makes sense to you, but...
There's a plug.
You think I'll be able to find that if I stick my head under there and look up? There's a plug thing for me to stick the reader in? Like a USB port? Like a USB thing?
A little bit bigger.
Yeah. All right. So if I just... So I got to buy this gadget, and I'll stick it in there, and then it'll read out some code, right?
My wife does it. That's how easy it is.
Hey, what is this, 1973? You can't talk that way. So then you get a code, and then I look up the code, and it'll tell me what the problem is.
Yeah, if this light comes on in her car, she goes, okay, she takes it because I showed her how to do it because it was real easy.
Yeah.
And she does it, something comes up, she goes, oh, the light came on my car, I put it in, it was code, such and such. So, okay, and I said, all right, let's look at it, and then... If we need to take it in, we take it in. If not, then it goes away.
So if we bring our cars over, will your wife check ours?
Thank you for the call, Dan. Yeah, and what is the answer to that question? Hey, Joe, you're on WGN Radio. Hello.
Yeah, John, if you have OnStar on your car, they'll read your codes for you.
Who will do that? How does that happen?
OnStar? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you know, I don't have OnStar with mine, but that is a great service.
I didn't know if you did or not, but if you did, it's one of the benefits. I found that out by accident. Anyway.
How's that?
Somebody met it. We were discussing it, and I said, really? And then about a month later, a code came up, and I checked it out through them, and then I went to a shop, and it matched. The codes, you know, they're...
Right,
they're,
so you got a warning light matched on your dash, and you just hit the OnStar button and say, hey, OnStar, what's wrong with my car? And they'll say, you need to change your oil or something.
Well, they'll read it. They'll read it for you.
That's pretty cool. That is pretty cool. My sister-in-law was in a crash one time and was briefly knocked unconscious after the collision, and the first thing she heard was a voice coming out of her dash from OnStar saying, ma'am, are you okay? Do you need us to call an ambulance? It was unbelievable.
It's a good tool.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for the call, man.
Have a very good day. Bye.
Yeah, you have a good day, too. You want to do that now or after the break? Do it now. Elif said we have a new news click up. The new news click says, should Chicago police officers be required to document every time they point a gun at someone? We're going to ask Willie Wilson about this. He's running for mayor. Obviously, our mayor has weighed in on this, too. Should Chicago police officers be required to document every time they point their gun at someone? That's an issue in Chicago right now. It's a fascinating topic, and we'd like to know what you think about that. Go to WGNradio.com. Scroll down a little bit. You'll see the news click. We also posted on my webpage, on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. In fact, we had a news click over the weekend. Producer Elif, what was the news click over the weekend?
Sacha Baron Cohen is punking several politicians in Showtime's Who is America? A. Good for him. Those people are a disaster. 66%. B. His methods are unfair. I don't like it. 34%.
Two out of three said, you go get him, Sasha. Okay, more of your calls, 312-981-7200. You can text, too, not when you're driving. All right, lots of calls and texts and really helpful information about what to do when you have a warning light on your car. I still think, though, there should just be an automatic. It should be, in fact, hit it, Elif.
And so it rang loud and clear across the land. Quoth King John.
It's good to be king. For a while.
I don't think this is asking much. When I get to be king, this will be the law of the land. All car manufacturers will be required to have a button that you can hit on the dashboard. I'm not exactly sure how they're going to do this, but that orange light will have to tell you why that light is orange. I don't think that's asking too much, do you? Okay, Chris, you wanted to tell us what? You're on WGN. Hi, Chris, you're on the air.
Hey, good. How you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
It's pretty easy. You go to Amazon and you buy this thing. It's called an OBD. And you plug it into that sensor underneath, and it connects to to an app on your phone that's either Wi-Fi connected or Bluetooth connected, and it'll tell you what those codes are.
How do all of you people know this? I've never heard this sort of thing.
It's less than $25. You buy it, and you plug it in, and it actually will tell you. I mean, it'll tell you lots of things. It'll tell you how fast you're going, all the different sensors on your car. Every sensor that it's on your car, it'll tell you what's going on with every one of those things. So,
okay, so I got this orange light
cool
on. Yeah. And you're pretty sure that if I just look under there, I'm going to find a port of some sort that will be compatible
right.
with these gadgets you guys are talking about.
All cars since 1996 have that installed.
Since 1996. So I'm going to walk into NAPA or to AutoZone, and I'll just be some sort of drooling, mouth-breathing dum-dum. I'm just going to walk in and go, I need the thing. And they're going to know what I'm talking
OBD.
About, right? OBD.
It's called an OBD. Or just go to Amazon and have it delivered tomorrow via Amazon.
Yeah. Chris, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate your call.
Have a good one.
Every now and then you realize everybody else has been swimming in one direction and you're treading water over there. Cindy, you're on WGN. What did you do? Hi. Cindy.
Hello?
Hey, you're on the air. This is John.
Okay. Just go to AutoZone and you just say, I need my car code read, and they come out, put something in, and give you a computer runoff of everything that's wrong with your car.
Yeah. Thank you for that call, Cindy. And Frank, you're on WGN. Hi, Frank.
Hey, John. A couple questions for you. How old is your car?
Like a year.
Okay. That's... The yellow light may be an emissions problem, and those emission parts are warranted later. If you look under your steering wheel, like by your left knee where you're seated in the vehicle,
yeah.
you'll see the port. Now I don't think you're going to go out and buy that OBD reader, but the mentality with these auto parts stores that if you bring it in, they'll tell you what's wrong with it in hopes that you buy the part that's required to get rid of the light. A lot of these machines can clear the light, but it'll come back in a short amount of time. The state of Illinois, if you have an engine light and there's something, a sensor is related to the performance of the engine, you will not pass emissions. So if you just go to AutoZone and say, hey, can you check this? I have a check engine light, and if it's yellow, that just means caution, just like the traffic light on the street. If you see the yellow light, you have to use caution. But if you see a red light, it's either a seatbelt
right.
or you're overheating or oil pressure. So the yellow light, you should address it, but it's not like something you have to do immediately. Just go to AutoZone, ask them to plug in the computer, and let them tell you what it is. This way, if you go to the dealer, you can say, hey, I have the computer read, and I have a failed sensor, and I believe that's the problem.
You guys are so smart out there and helpful, too. I'm really glad you called, Frank.
You're welcome, John.
Yeah, have a good day. Steve, you knew all of this stuff, right? Violetta, you knew all of this stuff? Andy, you knew all of this stuff?
Absolutely,
about
yeah.
You did not. You did not know about the port under the dashboard that you can buy a hoo-ha and stick it in there and it'll tell you everything you need to know.
I know how to drive my car to Rich and Ted's, and then they look at it and they tell me.
Andy Mazur, how much of all of that did you know?
Zero.
Excellent. Violetta, how much did you know? Some of it?
I mean, I feel like people have been telling me stuff all the time. I just don't know if I listen to it.
Yeah, well, maybe that's my problem. You said what? It's 129. So thanks to all of you for your advice. I hope that it helped maybe you too when that orange light comes on your dashboard. I still think when I get to be king, we'll make it so I don't have to go to one of those stores, that it will happen automatically.
And the people were glad. Okay, glad-ish. Put it this way, they were okay with it.
Oh, I just can't wait to be king.
I get to be king. That'll be one of my proclamations. Speaking of truth, we'll talk more about this in the next hour. Willie Wilson running for mayor is going to be in our studio, too. But we'll make time to also talk about the fact that the publisher of the New York Times said what I thought needed to be said. And he said it so well over the weekend about truth and about the press and about fake news. And he called out Donald Trump for his hostility to the media. And I'll read it exactly as he wrote it in the next hour. It's very brief. But he said, you want to criticize us and say we're a lousy newspaper? Do it all you want. All presidents have criticized the media, and you should not be any different. But when you call the media the enemy of the people, you are going to incite violence, and you make it dangerous for us to do what we do. And that you should stop. I don't know if the president heard that or not, but I thought that that was artfully said and necessary, too. What do I need to do there, Ms. Garris? You're whispering in my ear. Oh, yeah, that's right. Riverboat Twilight. RiverboatTwilight.com sponsors my accurate guessing of the temperatures along the Mississippi River. Go to RiverboatTwilight.com and take one of those trips. Ryan Burrow, speaking to the media, is in our studio. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, what mic are you on? Oh, yeah. No, you're on four.
Four. There we go. Yep.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, good to see you, too. Boy, when's Willie Wilson coming in? I need some money.
Everybody is doing that joke today.
I know. Well, I saw he's going to be doing it, and I hope I'm not taking away from the thunder, but it looks like Wednesday he's going to be doing another thing where he's going to return money to taxpayers of Illinois for some event going on downtown. So.
He's got a lot of money. He gives away a lot of his money.
Yeah.
He raises a lot of money. Bruce Rauner gave him $100,000. Huh, I wonder why Bruce Rauner would do that. And then Wilson has a tax rebate program for mm-hmm. your property taxes. And he didn't just do it this year. But the people on the South Side who are having trouble, I mean, I watched the video. They're in line.
Yeah.
And they just come up, hey, here's a check, here's a check. The checks are pre-printed, here's a check, here's a check, here's a check. They don't even cry and weep and hug. It's just like, thank you for the money, thank you for the money, boom, 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 boom. And they just move that line through, and he gives out thousands of dollars in checks and also cash. And afterwards, Bruce Rauner said, well, no, that's a terrible thing. They shouldn't do that. Why? Why should they not? Because he's running for mayor, and it looks like he's buying votes.
Sure. There is some ethical issues there. But wouldn't we all love to be that guy someday who could just walk down the street and hand people money? I mean, that's the dream, right?
It totally is.
To be that guy, to just walk down the street, there you go.
It would be fun to not only have that much money, but I would love to be able to give it away.
Sure.
And so I'm a little torn about this. Kristen McQuarrie wrote a really funny column in the Chicago Tribune 2 weeks ago about this. She said, look, we know the game. If you're going to play it, you won't be the first one in Chicago to do this.
Sure.
Just do it better.
Yeah, right. Don't be out there where all the media can see you handing over the money.
Don't post the video.
Exactly.
That's not how we do it.
Absolutely.
At least it's a little more upfront.
Yeah, I know. Really, that's what he should say. I'm handing out money just like all the other politicians, and I'm owning it. I posted video, okay?
Sure.
I'm going to vote for him. He's the honest, corrupt politician.
Yeah, not like FIFA or the IOC, you know.
Right.
Those all do it under the table, you know? Yeah.
Willie, if you're listening, thank you for agreeing to come on our show in the next hour. And again, that's what some people are chuckling, but I know you've got another side to that, and that's why we've invited him into our studio. I'd also be interested in knowing what he has to say about the fight over whether or not police officers in Chicago should have to document every single time they pull out their service revolver and point it at somebody.
Sure.
Should that be a paperwork event every single time they do that? And the question I'll have for you, if you're an officer in the 2 o'clock hour, is how often does that happen? I'll bet that most Chicago police officers will go months without pulling their weapon on somebody. It depends on your beat, right?
Exactly, like, yeah.
If you're on the West Side, maybe more often, obviously. But I'll bet that, by and large, this really isn't an issue. So maybe we ought to allow that. In a dozen cities in America, New York and L.A. included, they do have to do that now. So this is not without precedent. That's not why I asked Ryan Burrow to come in the studio, though. What are you reporting on?
Well, you know, this week, coming up August 1st, so that would be Wednesday, Wisconsin has its first ever sales tax holiday coming up. It'll run from August 1st through August 5th, and I'm not promoting the Badger State. I very much live and work in Illinois, but it sets up kind of an interesting little border war we see for 5 days now, because this is the time of year when all the parents start getting the shopping list for the school supplies. And what Wisconsin is doing is they're trying to bank on that time of year to get people to come up for 5 days. And hey, well, you know, you can get discounted school supplies up here in Pleasant Prairie and in Kenosha and Racine, and stop on by. You're going to probably be up here anyways, you know, going into our lakes and fishing and doing whatever. Why not save yourself some money by doing this? So it's an interesting ploy, that's for sure.
Or if you're going to fight the traffic at Oak Brook or Woodfield or something like that, just come north, head up the Edens. It can be done. And then I know nothing about shopping in Wisconsin. Are there some malls up there?
Of course.
I'm sure there are some near the border, huh?
There are. And so the reason Wisconsin's able to do that this year is they are operating on a budget surplus. And this is something that Governor Scott Walker wanted to do, give money back to the people. And they thought that having this holiday, there's 17 states right now that have these tax holidays. It could be a weekend. It could be a single day. It could be several days like Wisconsin's doing. But it's an opportunity. They're very excited about doing this. But for some of those border neighborhoods, Antioch, Waukegan, just trying to think some of those Lake County, towns that, you know, they shop anyways. What does it matter if I cross the border to get my kids' calculator?
Rockford, Galena. I mean, just head north. You're right there. So it's a sales tax holiday. And that's the only tax I pay, right? So I'm paying the price on the sticker, right? If it's a $39.99 shirt, I'm paying $39.99.
In theory, yeah. I don't know about the local, if there are any local tax that are tacked onto that.
State sales tax.
Yeah, this is the forgiven state sales tax.
And is it on any item that you purchase?
School supplies, electronics, computers. They've got sporting goods, clothing. Yeah. I spoke with a state representative just about a month ago up there about it. And she whipped out her Target, because she's got two elementary age kids. She whipped out her Target receipt from last year and showed me she spent $100 on school supplies alone. The sales tax last year was 5.5%. So she would have saved just over $5 on all of that stuff. But she said that doesn't include the gym shoes I had to buy them, the new clothes I had to buy them, all the things that went along with it. So she's obviously very excited about it.
I wonder if that's compelling enough to people in Illinois, right? Because, yeah, you'll save, but you're going to spend more gas. Your time is worth something.
I don't think a family from St. Charles is going to say, hey, let's run up across the border so we can save $5. But like I said, Antioch, Waukegan, Fox Lake, what does it matter if you go south or north?
And I don't have to demonstrate that I'm buying this for back to school.
No.
It's because that's not it. I mean,
the
timing works out that way, but it's...
You could buy a mink coat if you wanted to. It really doesn't matter.
For 5 days, August 1st through the 5th?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wonder what Governor Rauner thinks about that. Knowing that that's another opportunity, and knowing that really Illinois can't do that right now because we don't have the advantage of a surplus, budget surplus.
I lived in Minnesota for a while, and there you never ever pay taxes on any clothes. So, and that's nice. If you buy a suit and the suit costs $300, $400, $200, I don't care what your suit costs. The point is, it feels like you're getting away with something. It feels very nice to pay the price on the sticker.
Did you feel like in these cases you saw a lot of, in Minnesota's case, Wisconsin license plates in the parking lot?
Do you feel like
people cross the border? That's what they're hoping, is that in Pleasant Prairie over these 5 days, it's going to be all Illinois license plates. In Kenosha, it's going to be all Illinois license plates.
Of course, the Mall of America is a tourist attraction in its own right, so some of those people are going to be there anyway, but it sure felt good when you were making a purchase. And you sort of took it for, I wouldn't say I took it for granted, because whenever we would buy boots, nice leather boots that would cost three figures, right? It would feel really good that you didn't pay 5, 6, 7, 10% on it for whatever reason. Where you really feel it is when you come back to Illinois, because then it feels, if it didn't feel like a discount there, it sure feels like an upcharge here.
Well, especially since you get dinged with the toll as soon as you cross into the state. Hey, welcome to Illinois.
You were up there for the Super Bowl, right?
In Minneapolis, yeah.
You should have bought some boots.
I should have bought some boots. I was telling you off air that it was interesting, because when we were there, you had a lot of media from obviously all around the world. Mexico, South America. You had people from Japan. And of course, people from all over the United States too. Texas, Florida. And they weren't prepared for 4 below zero
It was really cold.
It was bitterly cold. They may have thought they would be prepared, but they weren't. So they were buying up a lot of coats at Mall of America. And what they did when they got to the airport on getaway day that Monday is actually these big trash cans. And they let people who were going back to Mexico and back to Brazil and back to Florida to basically thank you for the purchase and drop them off here and we'll donate them. It was pretty cool. And all of these trash cans all over the airport were full of boots
and
hats.
And they weren't giving them their money back.
No, they weren't giving them their money back.
No, that's okay.
It all went on the expense accounts of all of those media
outlets. You're not going to need this in Mexico or
exactly.
Houston or whatever.
Thank you for this. We will give it to someone who needs it now.
Huh.
It's pretty cool.
Somebody asked, does the tax holiday apply to cars?
No, it does not. It does not. Computers, though, is a big one, and obviously that's kind of tied in with school supplies. Yeah, computers.
Wow. Okay, now you got my interest again. I mean, $1,000. I'm saving $50-$70. I don't know what you're saving, but it depends on where you're listening and what you'd pay.
You can go up to Mars Cheese Castle, get yourself a sandwich, and get right a computer.
All right. So
down.
Ryan Burrow's doing the story for ABC and on WGN Radio, and that is August 1st, which is what's today?
Wednesday through Sunday through the 5th.
Wednesday through Sunday. And is that, you said Wisconsin can afford this because they have a budget surplus.
They do.
As does Minnesota, by the way. As does North Dakota. I don't know about Indiana and Iowa.
Indiana does, I don't know if Indiana's got a budget surplus. They are not running a tax holiday this year.
They do not do that.
No.
But Wednesday through Sunday. And you said that that August is a big tax generating month for Wisconsin?
In the state of Wisconsin, the month of August is the highest sales tax revenue generating month, even more so than the Black Friday through Christmas.
I was just going to say, it has to be December.
You would think
or November.
That, but, you know, I guess you just have a lot more school kids who need to get back and get their calculators and get
vacation
clothes and shoes.
Dollars are spent. People are playing
absolutely.
And doing fun things.
There are still people going to the Dells at this time of year. There's still people going up to Minocqua. Absolutely.
This says, hey, John, so Minnesota has no sales tax on clothes, and the Mall of America is jammed with shoppers from out of state doing back-to-school clothes. Well, sure, yeah, I think that's it. Obviously they are. But is that why people go to the Mall of America from here? I don't know. I think it's two birds with one stone. Hey, let's go have a fun little getaway, and let's load up on clothes because, I mean, literally, when we would be going back and forth, And we still do. We still have a lot of friends in Minneapolis. And we were living in Minneapolis. We had family here. And sometimes I was working here. We were going back and forth all the time. I never bought clothes in Illinois as a result.
It was just, you just knew.
Anytime you did, you thought, wow, am I stupid? Because I can get this very same shirt for less in Minnesota. And I'll be there soon. And if it was a major purchase, like coat, boots, mink coats, I have several.
You and Chet hanging out? Yeah.
You would wait. Well, Ryan, we'll be listening for your reports.
Cool.
Thanks for stopping by. It's 1:50. This is WGN. President was on a rant over the weekend. He was angry at the Wall Street Journal, at Amazon, at the Washington Post. He ties the two together. And the failing New York Times, which, by the way, is doing very well since he became president. And it's interesting because he met with the publisher, A.J. Sulzberger, the publisher of the New York Times, 37 years old, took over the helm that his father had for years. So there's Sulzberger and Trump, and they're having a meeting. When the president tweeted about it, he didn't say who called the meeting. Sulzberger said that Trump invited him to come talk to them, which is, as he says, happens all the time. Presidents, as long as there have been presidents or newspapers, have called publishers of newspapers or network executives to come in and talk about the coverage because they're unhappy about it. So there's nothing unprecedented about that. They both agreed that it would be kept off the record, the meeting, though. And when the president then tweeted about it over the weekend, the New York Times felt that since he violated the sort of let's not talk about it agreement, they would talk about it themselves. And so, because of that, Sulzberger then posted this. My main purpose for accepting the meeting was to raise concerns about the president's deeply troubling anti-press rhetoric. I told the president directly I thought his language was not just divisive, but increasingly dangerous. I told him that although the phrase fake news is untrue and harmful, I am far more concerned about his labeling journalists the enemy of the people. I warned that this inflammatory language is contributing to a rise in threats against journalists and will lead to violence. I repeatedly stressed that this is particularly true abroad, where the president's rhetoric is being used by some regimes to justify sweeping crackdowns on journalists. I warned that it was putting lives at risk, that it was undermining the democratic ideals of our nation, and that it was eroding one of our country's greatest exports, a commitment to free speech and a free press. Throughout the conversation, I emphasized that if President Trump, like previous presidents, was upset with the coverage of his administration, he was, of course, free to tell the world. I made clear repeatedly that I was not asking for him to soften his attacks on the Times if he felt our coverage was unfair. Instead, I implored him to reconsider his broader tactics or attacks on journalism, which I believe are dangerous and harmful to our country, wrote A.G. Sulzberger, the publisher of the New York Times. As I have said before, if you don't already, today would be a good day to subscribe to a newspaper or patronize the sponsors of your favorite local neighborhood talk show.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Here we go. Mm-hmm. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above the Chicago River. Overlooking beautiful downtown Chicago and Lake Michigan, this is John Williams. We're here until 3 on Saturdays, 10 a.m. till 12 noon on social media, WGN King John. We've got a new news click up. It's our daily web poll question, and today we're asking you what you think about the responsibility of Chicago police officers. They would have to fill out paperwork when they point their weapon at somebody. Should they or should they not? The attorney general, the mayor, the candidates are all debating that topic. And one of them's in our studio right now. Willie Wilson joins us on WGN Radio. Willie, welcome to the show.
Okay. Thank you for having us here today.
You and I have not met before. I know you or of you, but thanks for coming in and saying hi.
Okay. Well, I get a chance to meet a new friend.
How many times have you run for office?
Well, last time for mayor, and I ran for president of the United States, and now this one here.
You didn't win on the president one, right?
Well, I won because I help a lot of people. I learned more need of the people around the United States.
Right. You don't need to win the election to win. You're still helping people.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Well, before we get to this thing about the Chicago police, I know you've talked about this a lot with a lot of people, but just humor me, because the first time we reached out to you about a week ago was after at your church they were handing out those tax rebate checks or those property tax abatement checks. Tell me a little bit about what happened there that day.
Well, look, the last 3 or 4 years, we've been doing this every year, all right? We had checks. We ran out of checks. People came in from off the street, like 500, 700 people. A lot of those people didn't even have IDs or anything like that, and we don't ask those questions. We get money away around the country, you know, and this instant right here, they came in, people from out of shelter, and we gave away my own money, all right? We ran out of the people we had. Help. It was about 2,000 people.
But the idea was to alleviate people's property taxes or no?
Yes, it was. It was. But we also did that. But there was other people here coming in that didn't have property.
But you would still give them some money if you could?
No, we gave them money.
I said you would. You did give them money if you
yes,
could.
Yes.
So it was for people with property taxes, but it was maybe for just people who could have also used some help that day.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah. And you've been doing this for a few years. How much money did you give out this year?
Oh, well, we're a total of $300,000. Over $200,000 was committed. A lot of people didn't get their check, but what happened is that we're going to also be doing one this particular Wednesday.
You're going to do it again?
Yes, because we had a young lady that said, what about the white? We didn't see them there. And I said, you know what?
What about the white? The white people?
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Send me an email. Said, I don't see any white. You're helping the blacks and the rest of them, but what about the white? So I said, you know what? You got a good point there. So I said, then get me 100 and some Caucasian this Wednesday, and I'll donate for my Willie Wilson Foundation $500 a piece for 100. I added to it another 100 as well, and also Latinos and Asian. Then I also added another 100 for African Americans, so that'll be about 300 people. This coming Wednesday, about another $150,000.
Where are you going to do that?
Maria Pappich at 10 o'clock.
At Maria Pappich's office?
That's correct, uh-huh.
How do you determine the need of the individuals? What if I got in line? I don't need the money, or, you know, there's people that need the money a lot more than me. How do you determine the need and who gets what?
Well, we haven't done that. You know, like if I know you're hungry and you're hungry, for example, in Katrina, way back in Katrina, I took $650,000 down there and gave it to the people. They didn't have any kind of idea. I just take your word for it. That's what we do.
I know you've been a successful businessman, but where are you getting all of this money?
I make a living. I have a company that does a little bit over $60 million a year in sales. I give pretty much 99% of that money away.
What does the company do?
It's medical supplies, international. We ship product around the world.
What's the name of the company?
Omark. Omark Medical Supply. O-M-A-R.
So you have this money from your private resources. Governor Rauner, though, gave you $100,000, right?
Yes, he did. For that particular incident, yes, he did.
Why did he do that? Was there an expectation, like, I want the money to do this or go to these people? What was his reason?
Well, he gave it for the property tax, and we use it just for that.
For the property tax?
Yeah, we use it just for that.
And so how do you determine, though? Like, would people come in with a mortgage or a banknote or something like that? How does he or do you know that the money he gave actually went to help people with their property tax?
Because I had money of my own and checks. They had called in prior to it. We got the identification and the whole nine yards. So when they got there, we had all those checks set.
So you had a property ID number or something that tracked it?
Whole nine yards.
I noticed it because I saw the video and people were like in line and you were handing out what looked like pre-written checks. Is that right?
That's right. We pre-written all those checks over, 1,500 or some odd checks, whatever it may be.
Well, then did it hurt your feelings a little bit when afterwards Governor Rauner said that he thought it was outrageous that you would be giving some of that money out that way?
Well, here's my thought on that. If Governor Rauner wanted me to give his money back, just ask me. I'll write a check and give it back to him. Just that simple, you know. I'm not going to turn down somebody that is hungry, somebody being sitting on the street, you know, because of somebody else may say what it looked like. If I had just started doing it, it would have been something different. But we've been doing this for 25, 35 years.
Mr. Wilson, are you saying that the governor gave you the money specifically for that event on that Sunday to hand out?
No. Okay, he gave me checks. He gave me a check, and I took and wrote a check. His money was earmarked to give to the people. All right? I also had checks in there, my own checks. But when we ran out of the money, about approximately 2,000 people started coming in from out the street.
The voice you're hearing is my newsman, Steve Bertrand. But, Steve, what is your point then?
Well, I just wanted to clarify that because it's interesting to me if the governor had given the money to be handed out at the church where he had been visiting or if he had given that money as a broader contribution to the program and not specifically for that day.
No, that was for that day. We had done it. The governor also gave me some money early the part of the year for the same thing. We had done this here six months ago, and then we did it last year too. Then we was down at the treasurer office, and the people was there. I gave $150,000 there. I mean, what the problem is?
Well, the problem is optics.
Well, okay, but if somebody hungry, a different situation, right?
No, I know that, but let me just speak specifically to that. What it looks like, if you are a cynic, and you're not, is that you're running for mayor, right?
Yes, I am.
Well, there you are. As you're asking for people to vote for you, you're giving them a check.
That's not true. I didn't ask for people to vote for me.
You are, in general, asking people to vote for you.
No. I would never ask a person to vote for me that I give money for. We never ask anybody for ID or anything like that.
So, right. They're in Chicago. Maybe they couldn't even vote for you if they wanted, right?
Well look, we gave people money. We gave money in Houston. We gave money in California, Washington, D.C., the whole nine yards.
Well, then what was the governor's problem with this then?
I don't know. Like I said, the governor wanted his money back. If he can call me today, I'll write a check and give it back to him. But
Have you made that offer before to him?
I've mentioned it several times on different radio and TV stations.
He hasn't called yet, huh?
Well, you know, the governor and I have a business working relationship that we talk. I'm appreciative for him giving me the dollars to help the people. I don't take none of that money. I give it to the people. If J.B. today, running for governor, gave me $100,000 or $200,000, I'll take the money from my foundation. I'll give it away. If you gave me some money right now, I'll do the same thing. But see, it's a different when you're hungry, all right? I give away about $300,000 to people on the street every year, the last 15, 20 some years. I give away over $1 million a year to churches for outreach programs that people can't get out of their house in a wheelchair. Now, if I had just started, I can see it. But look, I have a documented record, commercial, everything back to 15, 25, 30 years ago, including the Wall Street Journal back in 1995. Look, they documented there.
I won't dwell on it anymore. And I like your attitude about this. I say, to hell with the optics. If people are hungry and I can give it to them, let's give it to them.
Absolutely. Thank you.
But I just want to just say one more thing about that story. It looks like if Rauner was at least going to use you to get to people on the South Side, this would be a way to do that. Does that bother you if, in fact, that's his motive? I mean, why is he giving you $100,000? Well, maybe because it'll make him look good among some voters on the South or West Side.
Well, I said, you have to ask him that. My motive is one thing. Help the person who's sleeping out on the street. Help the person with food. Whatever anybody's motive may be, my motive is to give to people.
What were you going to say, Steve Bertrand?
I have a question on a different story, John.
Yeah, as do I. So go ahead, Steve.
Mr. Wilson, Domati Pongo here in the WGN newsroom talked to the Reverend Gregory Livingston just a few minutes ago about the planned protest on Lakeshore Drive coming up, I think it's on Thursday. Yeah. And Reverend Livingston tells WGN Radio that you are planning to bail out anyone who's arrested. I just wonder if that is your plans and what your thoughts are on that statement.
Well, if Reverend Livingston, I say this, if Reverend Livingston himself, and I think T.O. Hardiker, all right, and a few people I know, I didn't say bail everybody. It might be 1,000 people get arrested, all right? But I will certainly bail him out because, you know, he usually worked for my campaign last time, all right? I will also T.O. Hardiker and a few more people that I know going to participate in that situation. I think that they're making a case. I think that this mayor today didn't bother Father Flager when he closed down the Dan Ryan Expressway. Now, let's see if they're going to bother these guys here.
Well, they worked. Flager worked with the administration. And I think the organizers Thursday say they're not. In fact, they are eager to face arrest. And so you've told the leadership that you will bail them out if they're arrested.
I will certainly bail out Reverend Livingston, T.O. Hardiker, and a few more people that I personally know.
But there's no blanket bailout. Don't worry. Willie Wilson's got your back. You are not. There's a miscommunication here. We just want to make sure we're clear.
Okay. Well, to be clear, just here. I have not made a commitment. I'm going to bail everybody out. I have not made that commitment.
You heard it here.
I have made the commitment that I will bail out T.O. Hardiker, Glad Livingston, and a couple more people.
What do you make of that tactic, though, shutting down Lakeshore Drive during Lollapalooza on its way to a Cubs game at Clark and Addison?
Well, I think it's freedom of speech, just like they've closed down the Dan Ryan. Somebody, that's not as dangerous there as opposed to somebody would have got hit by a car in Dan Ryan's Expressway. But I think that now, let's see what the mayor is going to take and do. I think all citizens should have the right to protest, as long as it's peaceful.
What do you make, and let's answer this question after I take a quick break, but so now there's this conversation about whether or not police officers should have to document every time they unholster their weapon and point it at somebody. I wonder what your thought about that is. Willie Wilson's in our studio. This is WGN. Willie Wilson is running for mayor in the city of Chicago again. You think you're going to win?
No, I don't think I know I'm going to win.
I wonder, though, really. I mean, you've been successful, and you can impact lives without being mayor. You obviously are. That's why we called you in. You give a lot of money away. You're involved in a lot of causes. Why run for mayor all the time?
Well, because the mayor have more money in terms of fair and equal contracts that can help a whole lot of more people in the city of Chicago, because billion in contracts and things of that nature and job. You can do a whole lot more that way, and I'm running to make the difference for all people.
Speaking of steering contracts in the city, do you like the look of the Obama Center as it is currently designed, and what's your thought about that?
Well, I think that they have to get in tune with the neighborhood. You know, that's why all the stuff is going on right now, equality and job and contracts. Unless the neighborhood want it, you know, I don't want it. If the neighborhood don't want it. If the neighborhood want it, I want it.
I get the feeling the neighborhood wants it. They want jobs. They want a certain percentage of the jobs in the construction to go to minority-owned businesses.
That's absolutely right. I like the idea of a library because it brings job and money. But let's do it the right way. That's all I'm saying. You know, I'm pro-business, but I'm also very, very pro-community.
This texter writes, John, can you please get his thoughts on decriminalization of marijuana?
Oh, I say use it. Let it make it free and tax it and pay some of the school teacher pensions and things like that.
Don't make it free. Make people pay for it, but make them pay a tax when they purchase it.
When they do it right. Because right now it's unbalanced. Like you in certain neighborhoods, you get arrested for it. In other neighborhoods, you don't.
Should police document every time they point guns at people?
Absolutely right. You shouldn't draw your gun unless you're going to use it. You know, I do know the neighborhoods in a certain part of Chicago, you know, people come in, pull guns. I mean, you get people getting shot, you know, going to the house to stop a disturbance. You know, you got people on the street walking and they just get arrested. They ain't have no guns. A lot of people just get shot and killed. The poor, mostly poor, you know, and they end up for what? Why you don't get so many people on the west side, Englewood, London, get shot and killed, but on Lakeshore Drive, you never hears it. Why you going to have all pretty much white police in the black community get out, but not in the white community? I think fairness is the key and help create, drop down some of this crime that you have, you know?
Lisa Madigan and the mayor sort of going back and forth on this, even today, this consent decree and what it will and won't require from the police department. And the police officers, the union, say that if an officer is... in his mind, got a reason to not use his weapon when he should, he's putting himself in harm. And he's putting the people he's there to protect in harm's way. If he's thinking, oh, gee, am I going to get in trouble if I do this? Am I going to have to fill out paperwork just for unholstering my weapon and pointing at somebody? I haven't fired it. I'm not going to use it irresponsibly. Why are we putting that sort of mental roadblock in their head?
Well, I think you got to look at the path. Look at the history. So many people out here of color go to jail, get shot, get killed, and everything. Over in certain other areas, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
All right? You got to balance this whole thing off. All right? So that's what you have to take to do. And there are another thing, too. The police department needs to be integrated more so. You should have African-American, white in the same cars, you know, and Latinas and other. Mix it up. You should have four superintendents. Bad to sit it up in four different sections so that they can better get with the people and work it right way, you know?
Willie, we're out of time. Are you going to march on Lakeshore Drive?
I haven't been asked, you know, but I'm just standing by. I have not been asked.
I understand that you're going to bail yourself out if you are arrested.
Well, I don't know if I have to bail myself out. They may not take my money.
Well, it's good to see you. We appreciate you sort of clarifying some of these points for us that have been in the news the last few days. Thanks for coming into our studio.
Hey, thank you. Do invite me back.
And good luck on the campaign.
All right.
It's 2:29. Steve's got more news. That's next on WGN. Had my first Willie Wilson experience. That was fun.
Yeah, he's seems to be a very sincere man.
And successful and indifferent to convention and a lot of the things that you might like in a person. He is that. So thank you, Willie, for coming into our studio. I said, are you going to win? He goes, do you know I'm going to win? Of course I'm going to win. Didn't win president, but I still won because I'm helping people. I'm not going to do his voice, but he's got a personality. So I hope you had a real good weekend. I wanted to talk briefly. So Andy Mazur's in sports for Kevin, I guess, today. Are you doing sports today for Kevin?
Yes, sir.
So when is the NFL Hall of Fame induction?
It is this weekend.
So Brian Urlacher's got two speeches, the long one and the short one, and right. He'll see how the mood of the moment is, and he'll deliver the right one.
I laugh because he was very, very short-spoken with us, the media, during his playing career, so to think that he has a long speech, it's kind of funny.
The short one's 9 minutes long. Imagine that, Urlacher going for eight and a half, nine minutes, or double that if he's in a groove. I'm not one for like the NFL draft or the combine or the baseball picks and all that jazz. I enjoy the games, but I must say I am a sucker for the Hall of Fame speeches. the induction speeches. And I don't make a point to watch them, but invariably we fall upon them either as they're happening on TV or later on online. And I thought Jim Tomey's speech was just so Jim Tomey. You know what I mean, Andy?
Yeah. I mean, this guy's got the reputation of being the most humanitarian kind of guy ever and the easiest to deal with and the most genuine. And, you know, it's his, probably from his upbringing down to Peoria.
Yeah, no kidding. He's, you know, we were talking about that a little bit over the weekend, that it seems like some of these guys that came from Central Illinois, Joe Girardi, and Jim Tomey, Ben Zobrist, mm-hmm. they are not only very talented, but they seem to be as good a guys as they are good a players. And isn't that a nice sort of thing? And so anyway, Tomey, you know, thanks everybody, starting with his little league coach, right? And he just spoke so well. The speech was so thoughtful. You know, I don't know if it's going to be remembered as the greatest speech in the history of speeches at the Hall of Fame, but I just thought it was really nice that he took the time to remember everybody, talk about them, acknowledge them. You know, he recalled, and he played for, what, six different teams?
Mm-hmm.
He recalled the great, immense pride on the south side of Chicago and how much he loved playing here, although he wasn't great for the White Sox, was he?
He was okay. I mean,
he was okay?
Yeah, he hit 134 home runs over four seasons with the White Sox and hit a couple of real big home runs. His 500th won a game, hit one in the blackout game against the Twins in the one-game playoff.
Andy, that's that's almost 32, 33 home runs a year. He did great for the White Sox.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
He did really well.
Yeah.
And it was really well-loved. I mean, as you can imagine, now he's working for him. He's in the front office and very happy about that as well.
Here's what so I'll play 45 seconds of him. This is good for Little League baseball players and athletes. This is just good for all of us to hear. Oh, wait a minute. Stand by. Cue it up. You ready, Elif? 3, 2, 1, hit it.
To every kid that is dreaming of standing here one day, take it one moment at a time. Don't sail too high or sink too low. Learn to be good at handling failure. Be the first one to the ballpark. Be the last one to leave. Work hard. Don't complain. Be a great teammate. Ask other people about themselves. You never know what you might learn. And above all, treat people with respect. The best compliment any baseball player can receive is that he is a good teammate. It's the reflection of all the things not listed on the back of the baseball card. It's the focus, the attitude, the openness, and the way an individual picks you up on Monday, but will call you out on Tuesday. In short, it's about accountability, reliability, and commitment.
Isn't that an interesting thing to say in your speech?
Yeah.
As advice to people, ask other people about themselves. I suppose if you're Jim Tomey or, you know, any of these great baseball players, your whole life has been people asking you about you. It's all about you. It's all about you. And I just thought it was so refreshing to hear him say, ask somebody else about themselves for a change.
Yeah.
And this from a guy who's hit 600 home runs, right? I mean, pay attention to somebody else for a change. And he also used the word respect. Mm-hmm. I will not hear that word enough these days. It makes me feel good anytime somebody sincerely says we should pay more respect to other people.
Yeah, you know, there's very few athletes that, and again, I'm making a generalization here, and again, this does not judge a person by how they treat the media, by any stretch, but it's the only aspect that I have to kind of go on.
Right, sure.
There's very few athletes that are genuinely concerned about your well-being as a media member. You know, I mean, it's our job, it's their job to kind of talk to us. I mean, that it's obviously an obligation that they have, and we need to do our jobs as well. You know, and he was one of those guys that I never really covered, but talking to the people that did cover him, he would kind of go out of his way to say hello to you and would go out of his way to find out how your day was going and how you were doing, which is kind of a different animal than most are probably used to dealing with in a major league clubhouse.
I listen to that and I then reflect on it myself and I think, okay, I've got to start being nicer to other people. I've got to start asking people how they are doing. How was their day? What about them?
Mm-hmm.
I either get so wrapped up in my work or it's so about me or my life or my universe and I don't pause enough to say, hey, Andy, how are you doing? What's your deal? You know, what's going on with you?
You know, the other thing that stuck out to me was about being the good teammate because, you know, you can have a lousy game and your team still wins. And, you know, you have to be the guy to kind of fall on the sword that day, you know, say, hey, listen, I didn't do it, but I'm happy for our team. I'm happy. And it's not only just being available to the media and those kind of things. It's about treating guys in the clubhouse the same, whether you go 0-for-5 or you go 5-for-5 with two home runs. Yeah. You have to be the same guy.
Texter says, which team did Tommy go into the Hall of Fame under? Was it the Indians?
Yeah, he's going into the Indians, and he's going to go in with a block C rather than the Chief Wahoo.
Right. 708, did you ever have a chance to speak with Ernie Banks? He was the best at talking about the other person. Yeah, we all have. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Ernie was. He was. Ernie was on auto.
You know, yes, he was.
You just hit play and he was ready to go.
He was ready to go, exactly.
But he would listen to you too. You know, and I told the story earlier in the season. In fact, it was the day after the home opener, what it was like for my brother and I and a couple of friends. Brenda was there too, and we shared an afternoon with Ferguson Jenkins and just had a swell time. Just could not have said more nice things about that guy too. So then there's this story too. Cubs pitcher John Lester took to Twitter, I'm reading from Paul Sullivan's story in the Tribune today, to defend the recent rash of players whose old and sensitive tweets have surfaced and to implore them to scrub their accounts. Braves starter Sean Newcomb and Nationals shortstop Trey Turner are the latest players to have racist, homophobic tweets from the past exposed. Brewers reliever Josh Hader was the first. And after some of his old tweets surfaced during the All-Star game, he was ordered by MLB to undergo sensitivity training. Hader then got a standing ovation at Miller Park in Milwaukee after the incident. You may have heard our Bill and Wendy play the audio and talk about that. They were a little divided on that.
Mm-hmm.
I know, I don't know anything. If that's, even if he was a Cub or a White Sox, and I'm in the stands, after that happens, I want this man to be successful. I want my team to win. But I am not giving him a standing ovation when he walks onto the field. I did not understand that. And he was booed loudly on his first road game in San Francisco last week. Why were the fans in Milwaukee cheering that guy when he walks onto the field?
It's a we take care of our own kind of thing as a baseball fan and as a fan in general. You rally behind your guy. If he apologizes and seems sincere in your mind as a Brewers fan, then you're going to applaud the guy and tell him that you're still with him.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the great basketball player, recently wrote a piece about how we ought not to try and judge everybody by their past transgressions, particularly when you're talking about these young, it's all about me, stupid athletes who are 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, and they're doing these things. He was not, nor am I, excusing it, but he was just saying, okay, people change. We all should try to change. So even if you know that, it's important to ask ourselves, what do we do about that information after we have it? After we find out that Sean Newcomb or somebody else put something else stupid on Twitter? I don't know the answer to that question, to be honest with you. I'm not sure what we are supposed to do with that. I don't think unemploying them is good for anybody. But I'll guarantee I'm not going to stand and cheer them.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope you get your mind right. I hope you're a better person. I hope that sensitivity training is magical, but I'm not real optimistic about all of that either, to be honest with you. But I'm not going to stand and cheer you when you walk onto the field. I do not understand that, Andy.
Yeah, you know, this is weird, too, because, you know, you and I growing up, we didn't have to worry about these things.
Oh, man.
You know, we said some things probably that we're not real proud of that, you know, within the confines of your own home, your own school lunchroom, you know, whatever. But now these are lasting impressions of people that now, unfortunately, in this day and age, is 17 and 18 or 19 really that young?
Right.
I don't think it is. Yeah, that you can't.
I don't think it is.
That you can't decipher what's right and what's wrong,
well,
what you should tweet,
you.
What you shouldn't tweet.
Yeah, so when you're 18, you will put stupid stuff out that when you're 25, you will know not to put out.
Yeah.
But you're still that person who was 18 years old.
Exactly.
You're just 7 years wiser, but I don't know that you are 7 years different. Now, maybe you are. Maybe like Abdul-Jabbar says, let's hope that people change and that it's a genuine thing. It's not just that you're savvier. But at least Lester said, if you're on Twitter, this is a quote, please spend the 5 minutes it takes to scrub your account of anything you wouldn't want plastered next to your face on the front page of a newspaper. Better yet, don't say stupid things in the first place. Too many young guys getting burned. Hashtag the more you know. Close quotes.
Yeah, and he also said in another tweet that was pretty much right after that one, that he says, I'm far from the sharpest tool in the shed, and there's certainly no halo above my head. But I know some of these young guys are great dudes who just had lapses in judgment.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know these guys, so I don't know what that's like. But yeah. I don't know how you say all of that. Here's my number, 312-981-7200. You can call or text that if you want. What do you think? What are the options to do when you discover that? I mean, the kid didn't scrub it. He didn't say it. Even if you did scrub it, by the way, somebody's got a screen grab of it.
Exactly.
That's not going to make it go away. That's on your permanent record, you dummies. You dummies that are putting things in digital social media. Maybe if you did it 8 years ago, we weren't smart enough. But, boy, anybody doing that starting yesterday deserves what they get. Okay, here's your turn, 312-981-7200. This texter says, Andy, we were just talking about social media and what do we do when athletes reveal themselves to have in the past or present said and done some hateful or hurtful things. Milwaukee John has the same fans that gave cheater Braun a standing ovation when he came back from drug suspension. I don't get it? Question mark? Meaning you ought to, John. That's the way these fans are.
I think it's fans of any team. I mean, really, if you're a fan of that team, you want your team to win, and you want your team to have its full complement of players. And you know, the guy serves his suspension; he's paid his price, and he's done his time, and you welcome him back.
This texter says, "John, scrub Twitter. Anyone looking at my Twitter account will discover that I'm abnormally obsessed with WGN Radio and its hosts and podcasts." John, freedom in the First Amendment makes it hard for language to be modified, said somebody else. Susan wanted to say something. You're on WGN. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about these baseball players saying these things. I taught for 35 years, and it was a very rare thing when I heard kids make racist or homophobic comments. It's different than just mean comments. And with our current climate, we've seen a very ugly underbelly in this country. And I think dismissing racist comments as simply stupid comments by young men really diminishes the importance of what they have said.
Right. So then I think that's well put, Susan, but I'm also trying to figure out what do we do when we find somebody 2 years ago, 5 years ago, whenever, said something like that. What do we do
right.
about
I agree with you that we should not be standing for them and praising them for just simply saying, I'm sorry. I think there is a lot more to showing change of a person's racial feelings or feelings about others' sexuality. I think we need to give time to make sure that those players really do change, and then we acknowledge the change.
Maybe that, yeah, maybe so. Maybe that's it. And by the way, maybe they never will change, and maybe you don't have that conversation anymore. You praise them for their athleticism, know that they're flawed people, maybe people you don't want dating your daughter. So don't give them a standing ovation just because they are. Cheer them when they hit a home run and be done with it.
Yeah, you know, and you know, with a lot of people that ask me about what does Major League Baseball do? Can they suspend these guys? And you know, they can because they're still playing for they're playing under a contract with Major League Baseball. But these things happened before they were ever drafted or whatever. So the sensitivity training is about as far as they can go. And you know, I think some people laugh it off, but I mean, if a guy really wants to change opens his ears and closes his mouth a little bit and understands what's going on in that sensitivity training, maybe they can change. I don't know. I think that's about the only thing Major League Baseball can really do.
This texter says, what's the upside of social media that makes it worth the risk of having stupid comments ruin your reputation? Interesting point. Ro and Anna are in Studio D. Hi, campers. No, you're in Studio A. Is that A or D?
A number one, I think. A. Right? Are we A?
Of course it would be A number one.
Right.
It's Ro Khan and Anna DeBlanc.
Just makes sense, right?
A1. That's why this is C-, the studio that I'm in right now.
Oh, stop.
What's coming up on the show?
Well, all right, so you just talked to Willie Wilson.
Yeah.
Right? So we're keeping him around. Because now, did he give you any money?
He did not.
Okay.
Did you ask?
I did not.
I'm requesting $2,500. Oh. This is what I'm doing. My property taxes were awfully high this year.
Yes.
And I'm going
big
to...
Big increase the last couple of years.
So we'll see.
By the way, for the record, I told three people today I'm going to have Willie Wilson on my show, and guess what every one of them said?
Why?
Get money for me.
Did he give you some money?
Yes.
That's what they all said.
Right, yeah. Well, I'm going to ask. It doesn't hurt to ask. And he's going out... He's going
Are
to,
you really going to ask Willie Wilson
oh, sure.
for some money?
Yes.
That's not really the spirit of things.
Come on,
aim a little higher,
If I do that in exchange...
Ask for me, okay?
If I do that in exchange for his appearance here, then I can get fired immediately. Oh. It's like one of those things.
And he could be in trouble, too, I would think,
Oh, I don't
somehow.
Know about that. It's more me than him, but, you know, whatever it is. Anyway, I just want to know, what is this all about? I mean, why, what's... I know you're asking. We're all asking.
That's okay.
What is it all about? But and you know, Willie, we were on the Willie bandwagon last time he ran. And we were even when he was running for president.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, mm-hmm. I don't know. I think America missed an opportunity here, but that's a separate issue. So it's going to be interesting. So I'm glad you did that. So that's coming up a little bit later on this hour. Also, Ben Bradley is going to be here to get us all caught up on things. And later on, A.B. Stoddard, there's a love fest between the Italian president and our president.
Did you see that?
I'm missing this.
Yeah.
What's his name again? Giuseppe? He's got a beautiful name.
Yes, I want to say this is a beautiful man with the most beautiful hair. And we love him, and he loves us. And I'm a two times tell you how much I love him.
It was like this whole thing. It was like, okay.
Giuseppe
right.
Conte.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Right,
perfect.
Exactly. So he is, it's really something. So we're going to play some of the audio of that because there's mm-hmm. there are some great moments. And the president, you know, on a day in which he made a lot of news this morning on Twitter.
Oh, boy.
And no one asked him about it. When he got two questions, because the first question went to the Daily Caller.
Oh, you kidding
me? No, I mean, of all the media that was there, he calls on the Daily Caller, which is Tucker Carlson's website.
Oh.
So
friendly audience?
Yeah. It's sort of like, are you going to call on CNN? No, he doesn't like them. Okay, all right, I kind of get that. He's going to call on Fox. No, it's a little too on the nose. Even Fox is mad. Like, what? Why? Because he's afraid Fox is going to ask him a real question. So instead, he goes to the Daily Caller. That's the way it's going.
Worked out for him.
Yeah.
All right, we'll be listening, kids.
All right, thank you very much.
My best to Willie, and no, I don't need any money.